Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Mid-century designer Russell Wright's historic home, studio, and woodland grounds, Manitoga, is located in Garrison, New York. This Saturday, Manitoga presents its annual outdoor performance. Created by Suzanne Thorpe, Resonance and Resemblance is a sonic performance and meditation created for Manitoga and supported in part by grants from the MAP Fund and New Music USA. Suzanne Thorpe composes sight-oriented sound works that use a variety of media and technology and performs on the electroacoustic flute, expanded with digital and analog tools. She joins us now. Suzanne Thorpe, welcome to the Roundtable.
I am really happy to be here. Thank you very much.
So before we speak specifically about Resonance and Resemblance at Manitoga, let's do a little get to know you.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about your background, how you come to deep listening and composing and improvisation, etc.
Well, that's a long list of history that I would have to go through. Currently, I'm a PhD candidate at UCSD, that's University of California, San Diego, in the Integrative Studies Department, the music department there. And that just means I'm like an artist scholar, right? I'm studying theory and ideas around the musicking that's happening and while also creating the music. I also am an educator. I teach at UCSD and I'm currently teaching at Bennington College. I run an organization called Techne, which introduces young women to technology through electronic music. And performative-wise, I perform with electroacoustic flute. I compose sight-oriented sound works, which is what Resonance and Resemblance is.
When did you begin creating pieces for specific spaces?
I started to realize that that was something that I wanted to focus on probably about 10, 12 years ago when I was doing my master's at Mills College. Mills College is pretty well known for contemporary music activity. And while I was there, I started to experiment with different ways of creating music and realize that there's an entire environment out there that we can be in dialogue with. And that was when I started to really dig into this type of a practice. I think all musicians are doing it in one form or another. We all know that every time we walk into a venue, we have to reorient ourselves. We have to attenuate or we have to tune ourselves to that particular environment. So I really do think that all musicians are doing it on one level or another. I'm just extrapolating this and amplifying this practice to a particularly heightened degree.
What is your relationship to or with Manitoga before now? Had you been there before you were approached or you approached them to develop this piece?
I was invited for a visit while I was installing another site-specific installation at Caramore Center for Music and Arts. There was a pretty groundbreaking exhibit that was curated by Stephen Moore at Caramore called In the Garden of Sonic Delights, and I was lucky enough to be a part of that. And while we were there, one of the Manitoga folks invited us down, Dan Rigney, for a visit to Manitoga because they were launching this artist in residence program. And I walked into the space and had a moment. I looked at the quarry pool that is there. It has this unique feature of a quarry pool. I looked at it and I said, oh my God, I know what I want to do here. I'd had this idea cooking, percolating in the back of my head for a few years before and just walked into this space and knew that this is what I wanted to do.
How did you go about developing the piece?
By being in the space a lot, mm-hmm. right? So this piece attempts to illuminate ideas of interconnectivity. And in order to be aware of our sense of our interconnectivity, we really have to initiate a practice of presence. And for me to realize how this piece could happen in that space, I needed to be in Manitoga, there physically for a really significant amount of time. So I stayed there. I did sound walks. I did sonic meditations, deep listening exercises. And I also used technology as well. I gathered field recordings of the space. And then I took those field recordings and did spectral analysis on those field recordings to figure out what frequencies are really prevalent here and attempted to extrapolate that type of information. So I extrapolated that information in a number of different ways, both somatically in my experience of it and with the help of technology and technology's ears to really be able to get detailed about some of that information.
You said sound walks, which sounds like it's pretty self-explanatory, but just in case.
Right.
How do you classify a sound walk? What makes a walk a sound walk?
So a walk that is a sound walk would be a walk that has the explicit intention of focusing on our listening and sound and the sound in our environment. We tend to be very visually oriented, and a sound walk attempts to open up our experience to the sounds that are happening around us.
And it sounds like it's related to like a meditative process, like just being more aware of your surroundings than you might normally be.
Yes. So I think that meditative processes, no matter what lineage you might attribute that to, have a shared goal in sharpening our attention and awareness of the environment that we're in. And this is one particular portal to that.
We have discussed deep listening on the roundtable before. We
were
lucky enough to have had Paulina Oliveros on before she passed away. She's a hero of the of the region.
Lucky you.
But thank you. Yeah. But tell us what is deep listening? How do you get there? How do you learn how to do it?
Okay, so you know, the practice of deep listening with a capital D and then a capital L is a practice that was formalized and developed by, as you mentioned, the American composer Paulina Oliveros. And she, you know, and that's to say that there's many ways of approaching listening. She happened to formalize this particular practice.
Right.
Okay. And this particular practice is a contemplative practice that she developed out of her own experience of engaging with karate and meditative practices, qigong, and her own compositional and listening skills. What this does is uses our listening skills, our oral skills, that's spelled with an A-U-R.
Right.
Our oral skills as a place to interact with the world and get information from the world. So, as I said earlier, we tend to be a very visually focused society. Deep listening reattenuates our attention to be as focused and or to equally incorporate the sonic experience into our system.
So I understand you consulted with Manitoba's landscape manager, Emily Phillips, worked on this.
Yes.
How
could not have done it without Emily. She knows that property probably like very few people do. She is in it. She is working with the granite, the ferns, the trees. She maintains the paths. She has this very visceral and somatic relationship with the property and was incredibly helpful in terms of helping me to understand where Russell Wright was coming from when he was designing the property and where the property is now.
If everything goes off as planned.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's a big problem with the P word, the plan word.
I know,
you know
it's
what
terrible.
I mean?
But if everything goes as you hope it will, what will this piece look like on Saturday?
I'm going to say, what will this piece be like?
That's
okay.
Better. Yeah,
so,
of course.
So we're gonna,
I'm too visually focused.
Right. Well, you know, we all are.
What will it be like?
Yeah. Thank you, printed word. It will be us being in the space, focusing on the oral. I'm framing this piece as a sonic meditation as opposed to a performance because I want to invite us all to be present as participants. And when I say it's a sonic meditation, what I mean is that it's emphasizing listening in the dynamic of musicking as much as the music production. So when participants come, they will be led on a sound walk through the property by one of three deep listening instructors who will lead the sound walks. The sound walk will conclude around the quarry. Listeners will be asked to have a seat around the quarry, and then we'll begin another aspect of the sonic meditation, which is the musicking in the environment, which is another component of our sonic meditation together.
The music part, how is it presented?
Right. That's going to be four recorder players that are going to be in kayaks on the quarry pool. So my idea here is, and, you know, again, this is best laid plans,
sure.
Right? My idea here is that the particular sonority of a recorder is anybody that has a three-year-old that's playing Hot Cross Buns right now at home and cursing the recorder knows that its frequency is a really strident pitch,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's a very focused strident pitch.
Quite high.
Yeah. So my theory is that in this environment, which is a reflective pool of water and a reflective walls of granite, that these recorders are going to have this really lovely interaction with these reflective surfaces. So it will be triggering those surfaces, interacting with those surfaces. And then as soon as you start playing those recorders, let me tell you, those birds and those cicadas and everybody else that's in that space gets super active. So the complexity is really going to be about that whole interaction.
Do you want to tell me about your performers? The recorder
sure.
players.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about my performers. A lovely group of performers, including Katie Down. She's a multi-instrumentalist, creative arts therapist, and deep listener. Madison Greenstone. Madison is a fantastic contrabass and clarinetist, improviser, and is currently a PhD candidate at UCSD as well, so I know her from UCSD. And Anne Guthrie, she's an acoustician, composer, and French horn player based in Brooklyn, New York. And Adam Tinkle, who is a professor at Skidmore and a multidisciplinary artist and scholar who works with immersion, transformation, and the audio visionary, and is also a woodwind player. So,
are they all capable kayakers?
I have no idea. You know what? I told them about the kayaks, and I'm just gonna really hope that they are gonna be comfortable. But you know what? They don't have to do a lot. It's
right.
A very small space. They just gotta get themselves to their location, and I can help shepherd them there, and we're gonna drop anchor, and they're gonna float. So
this time of year, there's certainly not rapids in the quarry pond.
Yeah. It's going to be a pretty calm surface.
Before I let you go, I would like you to tell me more about Technae, if you would. You're the co-director.
Yeah.
Tell me how it got started and what some of the success stories have been.
The origin story is always a fun thing to tell, and usually one that I tell with my partner in Technae, who is Bonnie Jones, an electronic musician from Baltimore. But we met at a concert in Brooklyn and were just rapping, hanging out, talking, and both of us we're in a space where we're like, I don't know, I'm the only lady on this bill. What's up with that? Kind of venting to each other about the lack of women in electronic music and their presence. And I said to her, you know, this is something that I really want to work to improve. And she said, yeah, I think we need to teach girls electronic music, meaning we need to get to them at a younger age. If we want to have diversity in technology, and in particular girls in technology, I think that a point of entry is when they're young and super curious and pliable and don't really know what boundaries are out there
right.
in the world that are structured.
Haven't put
for them.
Themselves in a box yet or been put in a box by.
Not yet. It really hasn't been solidified at that point in time, I think. And so that's why we created this organization to introduce girls, young women, to technology and give them the experience, the very hands-on experience of building sound, building electronics with their hands, their bodies, and getting acquainted with basics like basic circuitry and signal flow with their hands. And we feel that that relational activity is an important boundary to cross. And once girls cross that boundary, they're like, oh, wait, I can do this. All of a sudden, a relationship has been built for them between the technology and the production of sounds and their own engagement with it, and a whole world opens up for them. So that's been our experience. Our biggest collaborators at the moment is Girls Rock camps throughout the country. So they're organizations that girls attend to learn how to play music, but there's also a very heavy social justice component, which teaches young women about structural feminism and racism. And they get into a lot of educational aspects of structural problems in society and identity politics. And we feel that that's an excellent organization to collaborate with. The girls are already there musicking. They're already there learning about different places in society and how that's structured. And we just walk in, give them a soldering iron and some electronic components and push them over the edge. And their eyes just light up and they put two and two together. And it's off to the races from there.
That's fantastic. Thank you for doing it. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Suzanne Thorpe's Resonance and Resemblance in Manitoga and Garrison, New York will take place this Saturday. The event is sold out. Links to more information about Suzanne and Manitoga will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.